3. Dwight rose cautiously just behind the lip of the ravine. He was dressed in a radiation camouflage suit with an air mask behind its lead glass faceplate. As Turl first entered the platform area, Dwight held the mind radio close to his shield glass and said, "First alert." Dwight had been chosen as officer of the outside raiders because he could be depended upon to follow orders exactly, without deviation, and as one of the load mine crew chiefs, he could handle men. They had lain since shortly after midnight in the lead coffins buried at spaced intervals around the platform's perimeter. The coffins had been positioned long since by Care and cadets in the night while they laid the armor cable. They had been covered with dirt and now were also covered by a layer of snow. It had been no trick to slip in last night. The Brigante guards, drunk on drugged whiskey as they had been every night for 2 months, had detected nothing. Dwight had a streak of superstition. It all had gone almost too smoothly. Johnny was inside that atmosphere cable area, buried in a coffin just at the edge of the firing platform. Fire from outside would not hit him. They had tested that. But the thought of Johnny in there alone with those savage beasts made Dwight numb. He had tried to get Johnny to let somebody else do it, but Johnny had said no, he would not put a man to that risk. Somebody had to be in there to shut off the armor cable, use a remote control to complete the action of the crane, and lower an armored dome down over the console to protect it. The crane could not get the dome cover through the atmosphere armor unless it was shut off. Something about a switch position that had to be determined at the firing, a switch that might automatically shift once the humming stopped. And somebody had to cut the cables away from the console. Dwight had wanted to send 3 men in. Johnny had said that many wouldn't fit in the dome with the console. Turl had now walked to the console. Dwight said, "Second alert," into the mine radio. The third would come when Turl pushed the firing button. Action would be called when he was at the platform center and the wires had begun to hum. Dwight and his team had only 1.5 minutes to do their entire job. They had drilled and drilled in Africa, but one never knew. The snow flurries made the visibility sporadic, but he could see what he had to see. My God, that was an awful lot of Brigantes. They were a solid line all around the perimeter of the platform, backs right up against the atmosphere ionization cable. They looked lumpy in buffalo coats. They were protecting their bowstrings, but their crossbelts bristled with poisoned arrows. Dr. Allen had briefed them on those arrows. The poison was slow, but deadly. It caused the nervous system to speed up faster and faster until it killed. He had developed an antidotal serum for it. He had given them all a small shot of it, but he said any wound would need speedy treatment all the same. They each carried a small ampoule of the serum. Dwight hoped it worked. Then he saw that there would be 7 Brigantes on the platform. Was that the one they called General Sniff and a squad? They had not counted on that. What a fool Sniff must be to permit himself to be fired to Cyclo. But Johnny, he wouldn't have added that into the plans. Was it too late for Dwight to do something? His orders were very positive, to do nothing but his job. They had somebody else on the platform, bound. Who was that? My God, Johnny's plan wouldn't work. He would be in there all but defenseless. Dwight gritted his teeth. His orders were to do his job only. He would. But he had a feeling of despair for Johnny. The Brigante tribe was noisy and cheering over there by the morgue. They were no problem. Dwight turned his attention back to Turl. The Cyclo pushed the firing button. "Third alert," said Dwight into the mine radio. The weapons they would use would not interrupt the firing. They had tested them. They also had nuclear weapons in case Cyclos came in on the platform afterward from Cyclo. Turl walked over to the center of the platform. He halted. The humming had begun, heard above the shouting and wind. Dwight heard Johnny's voice in that enclosure. That was not on schedule. Dwight would do his job. "Action!" barked Dwight into the mine radio. 30 Scots threw off their coffin lids, 25 hit their igniters. One made ready to rush for the crane. Four were up to form a reserve. Flash. In a ragged outer ring, pointing in at the masked Brigantes, 25 Russian flamethrowers spewed out their deadly orange spray. Like 25 hoses, the roaring inferno slashed into the Brigantes. "For Allison!" came a Scot battle cry. "For Bitty! Scotland forever!" Dwight hit the button of a planted loudspeaker. It was a recording of charging, trumpeting elephants, the sound that would bring terror to the Brigantes. The mercenaries surged forward, trying to get their bows into action. Scything flames shriveled the bowstrings. The Brigantes were drawing bayonets to charge. The tribe by the morgue screamed, adding to the din. They turned and ran with all their might out into the plain, trampling one another as they sought to get away. A Scot had a flame out. A group of Brigantes were charging him with bayonets. "Cover Andrew!" barked Dwight. The Scots on either side of the dead flamethrower widened their arcs. Andrew had a claymore out. He cut down the Brigante officer, and then he himself went down. Two of the reserves hacked their way into the mess with Lock Harbor axes and slaughtered the Brigantes, stabbing at Andrew. Dwight glanced at his watch. 58 seconds to go. Flamethrowers were sending boiling flame into Brigantes. Their buffalo coats and monkey-skin suits were balls of fire. Another attempted charge by them. Dwight tried to see through the flame and snow. The crane. It should be moving now. Yes, the operator had gotten to it. One of the reserves was protecting him with a flamethrower. They had buried the dome cover for the console in the ground with the cable already attached. It was evidently frozen in. It was made of the armor from a discarded tank. The bottom of it was equipped with plane skids, which would anneal to the metal on which the console sat and seal it. Dwight could see the top of the crane dipping. The operator was rocking it to break the dome loose from the ground. There it came. It rose with a rush. It swung. The operator steadied it. Brigantes were rushing the crane. The Scot there blasted at them with a roaring flamethrower. The operator was coolly swinging the dome over to position. It could not go further than the atmosphere armor screen. Dwight could see the operator throw the controls over to remote. Johnny had the remote there in the cage and would have to do the rest of it if and when he shut off the current to the armor cable. Dwight tried to see what was happening on the platform. Snow flurries, smoke, and roaring arcs of savage orange flame barred his view. He was sure Johnny needed help. He gritted his teeth and did his job. Here and there along the perimeter, the flamethrowers were now off. Changing bottles? No. The Brigantes within their reach were burning piles. Black, greasy smoke was rising up through the white snow. Dwight glanced at his watch. They had time. His own cue to dive back into cover was when Johnny turned off the cable and the dome began to lower. Then he was under orders to get back in protective cover in the coffin. Scots were mopping up with flamethrowers. Two of the reserves were speedily putting Andrew in his coffin. They were shoving wound pads hastily under the radiation suit. A Brigante rose out of a pile of corpses. He had a bayonet. He charged. A thrown dirk hit him. A flamethrower erupted, and he went forward as a spinning ball of fire. The crane operator was out of his crane and running back to his coffin foxhole. 10 seconds to withdraw, said Dwight into the mine radio. It was suddenly quiet except for flame crackles and the wind. Nothing was moving in the Brigante ranks but smoke and small tongues of fire. Allison and Bitty had been avenged. The fleeing remains of the tribe were way out on the plain, still running. The smoke was very thick. Dwight could not see what was happening on the platform. Numbers were coming back to him from his mine radio. A number was a signal that a man was back in his lead coffin in a foxhole and had fastened the lid down from within. Dwight was checking them off. All reported except Andrew, and he knew he had been put inside his coffin. Dwight hoped it wasn't his coffin for real. Dwight couldn't see the platform for the smoke. He watched the crane. Wires were still humming. They must all be undercover before the recoil, Johnny had said. Dwight looked at his watch. The armor curtain had not gone off. The top of the crane had not begun to move. He was in an agony of indecision. But he could not get inside that cage with the atmosphere armor curtain still on. He wanted to disobey orders. He knew Johnny was in trouble, for the curtain had not gone off on time. But he had been chosen because he would obey orders. Time was up. The humming had almost ended. Dwight crawled back to his coffin foxhole, scrambled in, and fastened down the lid from within.